hello, and welcome to another episode of Right Now, a podcast on the craft and business of writing presented to you by Broadleaf Writers Association based in Atlanta, Georgia. On this episode, we are going back to the round table. This time, I'm joined by Broadleaf board members Shayna Ponte and Benji Carr. Hello, how are y'all tonight?
Good, how are you?
Well, how are you doing, Benji?
I'm good. It's always good to see you.
Yes, it is always good to see me. Thank you for saying that.
I've known you 25 years.
I know. I think you get tired of me at some point. But no. Not only have you known me for 25 years, but it's important to state here that you also were like part of the beginning of Broadleaf, and you weren't like right on the founding board members, but you were like right after that, and helped steer us from year one on.
I was a founding member of the conference committee and then was brought on to the main board after the first year.
Yes, that is true. That is true. So, and I always like to start these, since we're, you know, dealing with board members, and part of this is not only to talk about some area of writing that we have chosen, but also just to introduce everybody, and kind of halfway introduced you, Benji, so you can go ahead and take it from here. Just tell us a little bit about you and why in that time you decided that Broadleaf was where you wanted to be, and then Shayna will go to you after that.
Short version?
Yeah, the one without the tears.
You know that I don't know that I can do that. All right, but here
is there an answer without tears? I don't know.
Well, you founded a bookstore in Decatur at one point after we had known each other for a while, and not only was I interested in seeing the bookstore, but also I realized that you had open mic nights and that you at the time didn't have much of a sense of what kind of writer or performer that I was. So it was an opportunity, like knowing someone at that point, like 8 to 9 years, to sort of introduce yourself in a different context and a different way. Because like to you, I was just like the music clerk at Barnes and Noble who, you know, sold CDs. But you created a space wherein I was able to discover more of my voice. It wasn't the first time that I had done writing or performance. I had a background in journalism. But as I was trying to come into who I am, you created a space for me. And then I just sort of saw Broadleaf as an extension of that. And because there was another writer named Will Young, who I also knew from like college debate societies. And so you basically created space for both of us, both at Wordsmiths and then at Broadleaf. And I can't go into just how monumentally my life has changed as a result of those things, because, well, I mean, I already am who I am in terms of my voice and in terms of like the stories that I tell, just the same as anybody. But when someone gives you a platform or gives you an opportunity or tells you that your voice is worth hearing and just makes space for you, then that is like foundational and fantastic. So, so yes, I will show up at any envelope opening you ever want me to show up for.
I will always remember the open mics, because they very quickly after that first one became the Will and Benji show. That's the only reason they continued at that point, because everything else was just a minefield of danger, and we're not even going to get into that. But no, your essay on the Waffle House story that you told. That was
Yes.
it. That was the moment where I was like, oh, hey, Benji, I see you. I see you.
Yes. And that was actually another Barnes and Noble story too, because it was talking about selling Harry Potter books.
That's right. Shayna, you get the unenviable task of following Benji. So, tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to Broadleaf.
Well, I want to say first that Benji and I really got to know each other at one of our in-person board meetings, as the newest board member and as someone who's been with Broadleaf for a really long time. So it's cool every single time we like meet and talk to hear more as someone who's been part of the board and involved with Broadleaf for a while, since the beginning, which is really cool. I used to work at a high school and I taught language arts, and I was also writing at the time. I had decided when I was on maternity leave with my first kid, that I needed something that was specifically just for me, that I was teaching, that's for other people. I had a kid, that's for other people. And so I started writing with the goal of just having a first draft done. And I was like, I can prove to myself that I can do this. And several years later, it finally like happened that I had this first draft, and it was really cool. And then I was like, well, I can't be done at this point. And so everything on that has been icing on the cake. And in 2019, Kimberly Jones and Gilly Siegel came to my high school to do an author talk with their first book, I'm Not Dying With You Tonight. And I was like enraptured by like everything that they said. And I talked to them afterwards and I was like, I am a writer, but I don't have people. And I am just like so like enamored with everything you guys were talking about with having a writing community, because they write together and so they have this community. And Kim Jones was like, you should go to Broadleaf. And I was like, okay, I'll go to Broadleaf.
Whatever you
And
say. When Kim tells you something, you do it.
yeah, it was a really cool like experience, and I was like, I'm gonna do this, because I hadn't gone to any writer events at all ever. I had kept it kind of like secretive, like, oh, it's me, I'm writing. So my first conference was the 2019 conference, and it like changed everything for me. Like it was, I pitched and then I signed up for more pitches. It was the first time I'd ever like really like done that before. And I met all of these people and talked to them and had lunches with people and learned a lot. I was nervous for people as they had their first pages read. I didn't submit mine. I was too scared, but like I got to experience this and I was like, okay, writing doesn't have to be as solitary as it feels all of the time. And unfortunately, with all the 2020 and pandemic and the online conferences, I was teaching online at the time and doing grad school. And so I took a break while we had online conferences. And then I came back once we went back to in person, and have like continued to find this really cool group of people and, just like a place where like you meet people and everyone's just so accepting and like, hey, where are you at with everything? And it's just such a good feeling that I keep coming back. And then this year I was like, I want to get more involved. And so that's when I reached out to Zach and I was like, how do I get more involved? And so here I am now as the baby board member.
Left the trail of Reese's Pieces, and you followed them, and here we are.
Eventually. And now here I am. So
That's right.
helping to plan for the first time the conference, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's
Was
awesome.
the 2019 conference the Galleria conference?
That was at
It
the Comm Galleria.
was.
Yes.
I had a first page at that, and then I ended up selling my book, but I ended up selling my book during that because my first page went over well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I finally submitted my first page, not this last time, but the time before. And I was the first person read, and it was the
Ooh.
most nerve-wracking thing I've ever
That's
experienced.
getting hit with a hammer right away, man.
Right.
You want to kind of settle in and not be that first page, but that's okay.
I was, and it scared me so much. But then at least I was done and I could just like de-stress
Relax.
afterwards.
Yeah, it's true. I've not at our conferences, of course. I've submitted to so many of these I've never been read at. And the one time that I did get read at one, which was years ago, it was for what ended up being the first book I had published with Small Press. And they read it. And I remember because Clay Chapman was the one that read it. This was at the James River Writers Conference in Richmond, and he read it, and he just like put so much performance into it. It was crazy. But then they ended up kind of tearing it apart because they were like, it's not that it's bad, it's just that it's not a first page. It's not, this is not your first chapter. And so I had to go back and look at it, and they were right. And that ended up being my third chapter, and I created
Wow.
two chapters up in front of it, and then ended up finding a home for it. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's not what we're here to talk about as first pages, but it is a resounding support for it, because people should go ahead and submit and learn a lot from those.
Well, there is something that we can build off of from that, though, the first pages aspect. Like a lot of people, like yourself included, Shayna, who said that they were too intimidated, first of all, to like submit and put their words out there. And so I, in terms of the topic of what we were going to discuss tonight, just like the sense that we as writers put these like roadblocks up for ourselves and reasons why we shouldn't reach out or why we shouldn't do anything or why we don't believe that our work is ready yet.
And that's what, what we had decided we were going to talk about was drafting and revision, but also writer's block, or what we do when we feel stuck. How do we get unstuck? And I know some of this, as Benji was saying there, that kind of ties into that sense of imposter syndrome that he is a super champion of wanting to talk about, and I love that. But yeah, I mean, so I mean, let's just start with the beginning, like drafting, like the beginning, that first draft. What is your process for that? Do you just go all the way through it? I know for like myself, I'm not very good at doing what they call the vomit draft. I'm just not good at that. I'm too busy trying to rework things as I go, and that's my process, and that's what I'm comfortable with. But how do you guys approach it?
So I am definitely more of a plotter for the most part. I at least have my major plot points figured out. Now I know where point A and point B are, but I don't necessarily know like the zigzag that goes on between point A and point B. So I do pants it a little bit there. But when I was writing my first draft of The Nightshade, which is the first book I wrote, I kept going back and trying to fix and fix and fix, and I never made any forward progress. And then I read Stephen King's book, and he was like, stop doing that. And so I said, okay, I'm gonna listen. And so with the project, another work in progress I'm working on, I just kept pushing forward, and I'll let myself skip around everywhere. And if the dialogue is running, I'll just script it out and worry about making it pretty later. Or if the scene, like the in between the dialogue is working, I'll write that. Or if I really want to just do this description, I'll do that. And it was a lot more successful the second time around to just kind of push and push and push. What about you, Benji?
With Impacted, I wrote to cliffhanger. I had to keep myself in suspense with like a general idea of where things were going, but I also didn't want to completely map it out because I had to, because once I've told the story to myself once, then there's no surprise in it when you're trying to get there again. And in fact, you can start to feel these like doubts of like, have I built a strong enough world to support this or anything of, or like that. So what I would do was I would write a chapter, and I have my best friend who I've been writing stories for since I was like 14 years old. Her name is Vicky. And and I would send her an email of the chapter, and occasionally I would send it to like three or four other people. But I told them that I didn't want feedback because I kind of knew where I was going and I didn't want questions or anything to like get in my way. What I wanted to do instead was just know whether or not that what I had built not only kept me like curious about where it's going to go, but kept others curious about where it's going to go. So I wrote cliffhanger to cliffhanger to cliffhanger to cliffhanger for a year. And
Wow.
yeah, and it's just one of those things. Well, because I always wonder sometimes if I was born in the wrong time, because you've got like Dickens who wrote like in installments, or like Thackeray, where like
Serialized.
everything was that written like completely serialized, where you had to make sure that what you had put out there had considered the audience and the audience response and would have enough audience interest to keep you driven. Just keep going. But
Yeah, it's funny. As you were talking about that, I was like, that, yeah, basically you serialized your novel by chapter. That's pretty good.
that's very
I,
much what I did. Yes.
yeah, yeah. I guess I actually want to revise. I'll revise before we talk about revision. My comment on the vomit draft, because I'm now realizing that my first draft is actually my outline. For the work in progress I have when I was asked for the outline by my publisher, StoryPlant, I said, "Are you sure? Because it won't be short." And he said, "No, just send it, send whatever." And so I sent it to him, and it was 12,000 words long. Because when I outline, I don't just put down what's in the chapter, but if there's dialogue that I want to put in, I write it out. And so, like, I will have some back and forth dialogue in my outline chapter by chapter. And so it becomes very, very long. And I realize that's basically my outline is effectively what 10% ish of what will be my finished novel. So yeah, maybe I do a little bit more than I think I do. It's just that when I start writing the manuscript, I do have to go backwards. I like going back like at least 5 pages to what I wrote before, so that I can get in the flow. It's kind of like priming the engine for me. I kind of get going, and then I can flow better into the next chapter. But anyway, revision. So okay, so you've got it written. What is your process for revision? Like, I will edit something 2 or 3 times before I dare to let anybody see it.
I nitpick over words just to make sure that everything is exactly as funny as I want it to be, or that everything is as like gut punch as I want it to be. And but I'm very spare. Again, the background in newspaper writing helps with this because you're essentially writing for it to run the very next day. And a lot of what I've been reading, things like Dashiell Hammett or Agatha Christie, like they're pulp popular novels. They are not very long, and they often speak very directly to an audience that is familiar with how genre conventions are going to work. And so, as a result, it uses this like quick, blunt language. And so I tend to not overwrite. I'm not very floral in my descriptions, but I want to make sure that the words I pick are precise. And so, like, I will handwrite in order to make sure that a more emotional draft comes through, because if you handwrite, it is more visceral. You react emotionally to it, and then you type it up and you can correct from that. But then it also serves the practical purpose of then, like, if you're emailing your stories out to people, then you can't necessarily send them the handwritten draft.
Right. That's interesting. Do you since you're talking about using, being sparse and trying to use the in that estimate kind of the correct amount of words, do you find that you are adding more when you do your edits then? Because I mean, I'm a little bit of both. I'm always cutting back where I get maybe a little too verbose or maybe something that doesn't quite work, a sentence or something like that. But this is like in my edits, that's when I start adding more of the sensory detail and more description and things like that that I may have kept short just to keep the flow going.
I will ask myself stuff like, this is going to sound, I ask myself essentially things like, does it work? Is this the best way to say this? Like, basic stuff. But then in addition to that, you want to also ask yourself, like, what is the character looking at right now? How would the character describe this? Like, if the character is in a hurry because they just beat someone to death, like, are they looking around the room and describing exactly, or how would you do this? Would you frantically look over here? And like, what would you leave? And then when you realize all the details of like what a clumsy person would do, then you realize that there are a whole bunch of messes that have to be cleaned up, and that there are, like, at one point in my book, I had someone turn around a car, if only because I realized that I myself had left the phone in the previous scene. And I'm like, wait, should I rewrite this with him having the phone? Or would he have forgotten the phone? And does that create another complication? And what happens if he goes back versus if he goes forward? And so that's why, in the middle of the second chapter, he turns the car around. But anyway. Yeah.
It's crazy. I like that. Shane, what about you?
Well, I definitely stick with typing most of the time when I am writing, unless I'm get stuck with writer's block, and then I usually switch over to handwritten and then go back and forth, and that helps me. When I am revising, I leave it alone for a little bit and don't look at it, and then I go through and read it all the way through. It was interesting with Nightshade because that was the first book, and like I said, that was the one that I was trying to prove to myself that I could even do a first draft. And I could see every time I like stopped and paused and time happened, and then I went back to it. So there was like these awkward gaps in it that I had to go back and fix. And with Nightshade, I have one friend who has read every single version of it, so he's the only other person who's seen that first draft. With my other work in progress, I'm doing my second draft before I ever give it to anybody, because I've learned a little bit differently. I tend to be sparse as well, and then I have to flush everything out. I look at the whole story and what are some major pieces that I need to go back and fix, or plot holes, those kinds of things, and then, or character development sometimes too. And then I'm adding in the sensory detail. Like I said, especially with my most recent work in progress, I did a lot of scripting out of scenes. And so then I had to go through and fix a lot of those scenes, because I'm not leaving it as a script. So I had to go through and, okay, what's going on? What are they paying attention to? What's the scenery like? What's the setting? All those kinds of things, and add it back in. So.
I have a question. Or
Yeah.
both of you, actually. When you're writing, do you keep yourself entertained with your own story?
If I'm not entertained with my own story, I have a hard time writing it. And I've had stories like that before where I just like basically it doesn't feel like it's the story I'm supposed to be telling, and I have a hard time making myself sit down and write.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. When I was coming up with my ideas initially, it was, what do I want to read? And that's the story that I wrote. And then it, morphed into something else completely. I also love the moment when I go back and I'm reading a draft to fix things, but then I find moments I'm like, that was really good. Like, that was hilarious, or that was a gut punch. And I'm like, I did that.
I know. I love those moments when, because I love you. I'm like Benji. I like getting humor into my stories, and I love the feeling when I go back to read it and I actually just like laugh out loud because I did something. I was like, oh my gosh, that worked. That makes me feel so good.
Yes, you get that sense that you discover something that you didn't expect as well. Like those things are like, if I add this, oh wait, what about that? And then you realize that you're compelled in your own story, and that is going to communicate to any reader that you then send it to, or most readers that you would then send it to. Because if you're having fun, then they're having fun. And if you want to keep going, then they'll want to keep going.
I tried for a November to just pants something, and I was just like, I'm just gonna go for it. Like, whatever, I'll write this children's book. And I tried to pants this like middle grade novel, and I ended up boring myself partway through. I lost any sense of direction. The characters lost all their sense of direction, and that lives in a pile of writing that no one will probably ever see. But it was an experience, and I learned that's not how I draft, and that's not how I work. And I lost full interest in it, and have had no interest in going back to it.
Those frustrations are still part of the process. I love that too. Like that you have to fail at stuff.
Oh yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, we also wanted to
Not
like
that you
bring
fail.
up writer's block. And for me anyway, it's like I don't actually believe in writer's block. It doesn't ever seem to work that way for me. Like I've just like I don't have anything to say. I can't figure out what to put on the page. For me, it always ends up happening when I am either A, as we're talking about, writing something that is just not my story to tell, or B, I start trying to push the story or characters in a direction that it clearly doesn't want to go. And I liken this to like just recently I kind of hit this point of exhaustion where I knew I had to take a day off and just lay down because I was feeling physical resistance inside of me at the thought of having to go work again the next day because I was just exhausted. And that's kind of what it always feels like for me when I hit that point of block. It's that it's not that I have forgotten what I want to do or can't come up with the words. It's that I'm trying to do something that isn't supposed to happen or I'm not supposed to write.
I had one of my works in progress. The character finds a letter that her mom had written her before she passed away. And I knew, like, so the character's holding on to this letter and holding on to it and holding on to it and refusing to read it because she's not dealing with her grief, right? And when I was writing that first draft, I had no idea what I wanted that letter to say. I just knew it needed to be really impactful for her once you finally get to that point that she reads it. And so I literally left a chapter that was just a placeholder. And I said, this is where she reads the letter and she's impacted by it. And but then when I went back and I read everything in context, I was able to go back and really write that chapter. And it was a form of writer's block. I wasn't able to do it in that moment. But once I had the rest of the story figured out, it really helped. And honestly, I think my subconscious is constantly working on things. And so I'm working on another draft of the Nightshade before I send it over to my copy editor. And I got really stuck last week on this turning point. And I emailed my developmental editor and I was like, hey, that I'm stuck here. And then I've been marinating on it for a couple of days. Like, we went up to go to my sister's college graduation, and I've just been thinking about it. And this morning I wrote out all of the thoughts because it's been ruminating for days now. And now I know where it's gonna go, but I was so stuck on it last week. I could not figure out how to fix that scene. And now I know. So
I mean,
sometimes time.
giving it some time to breathe. Yeah, no, I like that.
Giving yourself space and permission to be able to work through things, like, and knowing that you will.
I like the giving yourself permission. I mean, that's something that I think every writer needs to learn. It's you can give yourself permission to step away. You can give yourself permission to write a terrible scene. You can give yourself permission to, to take longer to finish that first draft than you want. You know, I mean, you have to avoid putting like the pressure of expectation so heavily on yourself that you can't function.
I think that's really important when you're trying to write, because I think when you feel like you're paying attention to everybody else's expectations, you lose sense of yourself as a writer.
Yeah, absolutely. So like for me, when I get stuck, you're talking about stepping away, whether it's a couple days or not. But if I'm at a point where I need to work through a story idea, usually right before I get to it, or never really mid-scene, but usually when I'm preparing to write something, my way of getting things going is to take a walk, and it doesn't necessarily have to be outside. Like I will walk circles around the house. I try and only do this when I'm here alone, because I feel like I might concern my family if I'm just wandering around mumbling to myself.
Do the
But
cats follow you when you do that?
no, the cats are afraid of me when I do that. They start by just looking at me, and the dog leaves the room. And the cats will just stare at me for a little bit, and then will just disappear. They're like, well, he's doing that thing again. But that's just my way of being able to work through parts of a story that I'm unsure about. So what is your go-to?
On the times when I've been stuck in the past 5 years, or so, not that I'm not writing, but to try and like unjar myself again in the moments where you need permission to step away, things like that, I do have a goal in mind of like 125, 150 words a day, because 150 words a day is, and I was just doing the math, 54,750 words in a year. So that if you have to take 2 or 3 days away, you know that if you write 1,000 words by the end of the week, that you have made up that deficit or things. So you keep track. And you keep yourself accountable in regard to that. However, one of the things that I've found jarring lately is getting started, D like deciding like where to even begin, or like even whether or not an idea is a good idea, which sometimes you don't find until after you've gone through it. But I've been trying to give myself flash fiction prompts, 400 to 600 words, writing down memories, writing a letter to a friend, things like that, things that will just sort of unlock you and remind you of who you are. I don't know that I specifically answered the question.
You did. Yeah.
I like that you're unlocking that re things that remind you of like what you're doing and who you are, and you got this, you know. I sometimes take breaks. Sometimes ec like exercise of some sort, whether it's a walk or yoga or that kind of thing, will help, especially if I'm trying to like get into a writing session. Sometimes it is interviewing my character, and I will just do like a Q&A back and forth in free write and do that because they're the one that's giving me trouble. So I'm like, why are you giving me trouble? And then it answers
Yeah.
me. And
I've done that. I've done that before, stream of consciousness interview with characters. And I remember one instance where it felt like completely the character completely answered with something I had never even considered for the story. And it was like the piece that was missing. And it was wonderful because it's all there. And if you get to know your character well enough to be able to just sit down and say, "Hey, tell me what's going on," it's amazing what it'll unlock.
Yeah, I had some of the feedback I had gotten actually at the first Broadleaf conference was, why is your bad guy doing the things? Like right now he's coming off kind of almost like a Disney villain, like he's just bad to be bad kind of thing. And I was like, okay, I need to solve this. And so I just started interviewing my royal vizier and was like, yo, what you doing? And he came up with this whole piece of, we're a city state and we're self-sustainable and but our population has grown so much and our numbers aren't going to match up. So we have to be stricter with all of these things because otherwise we're going to have too big of a population and not enough like produce essentially to be sustainable. And that's why he does all of the things that he was doing. And it was just this interesting, I didn't even think about that.
Fantastic.
Like, and it came forth and he said, this is what it is. And I was like, I needed that. And it was so much easier to go back into edits knowing that, and having that. And then some of those pieces made it into what he says,
That's really cool. I love that.
Because that gives him logic, that gives him methods, that builds up like ethics, and it just sort of creates. Like it grounds the character. That's
But
fantastic.
it was so weird though because I mean those early drafts he was a Disney villain, right? Like he was there and he's bad to be bad and he's doing these things and obviously I hadn't like consciously thought of it and considered it and then he told me what it was and now I know. Like, and that's the wildest thing about being a writer to me is that your characters have such a mind of their own, and things that you don't consciously think of, they've already thought of it and they have a decision, just like you were saying, Zach, of like, sometimes it doesn't work when you're writing because you're trying to make the characters do something that's not natural to them, and they have such a drive themselves.
Well, these things always go so fast, but we're like running up against time, and I like to finish my conversations with conversations about mental health. And generally I ask, how do you go about managing your mental health? But honestly, I feel like we've already answered a lot of that, with how we process things and give ourselves permission and, take breaks and all this stuff. So I'm going to spin it just a little bit and say, for the writers who are listening, what is your advice to them on managing mental health as a writer?
It's so important. It's just so important to manage that. And I've been reading Big Magic very slowly since January. And one of the things she talks about repeatedly are two things. One is just being kind to yourself and remind, like, celebrating whatever wins that you have. And the other thing that she mentions is finding joy in your creativity. And I think sometimes we get bogged down in such stress about making it perfect. I'm a perfectionist. Like I want it to be perfect. I want it to be beautiful. And I really have to try to let that go and just find the happiness and the joy in those great moments in enjoying my creativity, whether it's, amazing and perfect or not. And I think that's really stuck with me. And I think that's an important thing to kind of help with your mental health, to help with those anxieties and those stresses.
That's one thing that I preach to writers all the time is celebrate every part of this journey. I mean, you finished a book, celebrate, you sent a query out, celebrate it. I mean, you just this every there's so much rejection and difficulty and aloneness in this that you have to be able to celebrate those moments.
A couple of weeks ago, I was reading this book by Matt Haig called Reasons to Stay Alive, which is a sort of. He talks about his own depression and he talks about it in an instructive way. to let people know that they aren't alone. But on the very first page, he says that one of the things he said, like the fact that you're holding this book and the fact that this book exists is in and of itself at one point felt impossible, because I never would have thought that I would have been able to do this. I never would have thought that, like, that there would have been a future wherein I would have been so far out of my own depression to be able to believe that a better life existed. But the thing to know, he said, was that depression lies. It essentially goes into your brain and tells you things that are not true. Another friend of mine, when I was growing up, was coping with his own mental health struggles. He was very, 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 very quiet, and I had put him on a pedestal. I didn't realize that he was going through things as well. And I was always chatty as hell. Basically, just talking. I have no poker face. I let people know exactly how I'm feeling, exactly what is going on. And I think this sense of reaching out and saying that you need help, or using letters or using words in order to write through your feelings and your struggles and your pain, it gets it out from this like pressure cooker inside of you and puts it out. And so you write as a way of keeping yourself safe and keeping yourself alive. A lot of times, you know, you think you're writing this like sweet, happy little short story, and then it turns out to be, it goes into like areas that are way darker than you ever realized, because you're processing stuff through your work that you don't realize. And I'm made better because I talk too much. I am made better because I write and let people know how I feel. And I just sometimes you have to remind yourself who you are, and you have to remind yourself that you're not alone. And I'm grateful to you, because both of you have in times helped me to realize that.
Cool.
I
I'm
really relate to what you're
crushing it.
saying, Benji, for sure. We've been dealing with grief in my family this spring, and writing to get the things out has really helped. And it's been wild for me because it's coming out in poetry. I don't write poetry on a regular basis, but that's just the way it's coming out and the words, and it is definitely like very helpful.
Yeah, love
My
that.
condolences to your family.
Yeah,
Yeah, thank
it's,
you. And then
yeah, I think writing is definitely a way to help process grief among, you know, the other things. But yeah, love that. Well, what I don't love is that our time's out. Now granted, I get the pleasure of talking to you guys a lot, and that's great. I love it. But this has been fun. I've really enjoyed this, and I'm sorry that it is over, but thank you for making the time and for having this conversation. I appreciate all that you offer, Broadleaf. And Benji's not just, you're not just a board member. It's important that I make sure I say this. You are board member emeritus. And that title means something. It means you're old. It means you've been around a while. I don't even get emeritus titles. I just get emails. But anyway, no, I've enjoyed this. So thank you very much for making time and for sharing, you know, your thoughts on all this. And I really appreciate it.
Thank you
Thanks
for
for
having
having the
us.
invitation. Yes. All right. Talk to y'all soon.
Bye-bye.